Let the Galaxy Burn. Narrated by a Border Prince. Cross the stars and hope for glory, but where the Evan's wrath? Take your salt and hear a shipman's story. Listen to tales of the Gulf, of stars that sing and worlds that lie beyond the ghosts of the rim. But remember, lads, there ain't no words for every void-born thing. Shipman's Labour Chant, Gothic Sector, Segmentum Obscurus. Ancient History by Andy Chambers. Nathan ran down the stinking alley, panting and sweating. He could hear shouts in a scuffle behind him as they pounced on Kendrickson. His mind raced faster than his feet across the cracked slabs. Poor old Kendrickson. Still, better him than me. He leapt over a prostrate body, almost invisible in the darkness, as the irony of the situation struck home. At least, that's the last time he'll try to get me killed. At the corner, he risked a glance back. A lone street loom cast a pool of yellow light over a scene that looked suspiciously like one from some ministerial morality play. Four burly, shaven-headed men in dun-coloured coveralls were hauling Kendrickson to his feet. He seemed unduly surprised, nay, stunned, to be cast in the starring role of the eponymous, incautious reveller, laid low by local ruffians, cultists, or worse. Surely a punishment from the God Emperor for his carelessness and self-indulgence. The image was shattered when the officer stepped out from the shadows to congratulate the men on their catch. Nathan had never seen an Imperial naval officer before, but he had no doubt that he was looking at one now. Tall, poised, immaculately dressed in a tailored uniform coat and a pair of glossy black boots, which had probably never trodden the dust of a planet for more than a few hours. He would surely be a junior officer to be in charge of a gang like that, trawling through the back alleys of Junip Town to fill out some labour team aboard his ship. Junior or not, he radiated the absolute assuredness that only generations of breeding and a lifetime of training engenders. Nathan started to back away as his mind raced on. There were rumours that Imperial ships would come from Portmore to Laith, but everyone said that sort of thing when there was a war among the stars. Half the people hoped the fleet would come and save them from Sanctus knows what, while the other half were afraid that the fleet would bring the war to their doorstep. Nobody had ever thought that the Navy would come to steal a tithe of men and take them away on their ships. Men who, if only half the stories were true, would never be seen again. Kendrickson was off for a cruise, and there was nothing Nathan could do about it. He certainly didn't intend taking on a press gang single-handed. "Well, well," said a finely cultured voice from behind him. "It looks like young Ray missed one. Get him, lads." A blow struck his head. Bright stars flashed before his eyes, and he fell into waiting arms which bore him off even as his consciousness slipped away. Nathan woke to the sound of a voice speaking. It sounded deep, resonant, and faintly amused. He was amongst a crowd, being propped up by a stranger. The voice rolled on through his confused awakening, like martial music, proud and insistent. "I could take this ship twice round the galaxy and wander the void for 100 years if the Emperor wished it. One thing
would bring me back to the hallowed worlds of humanity before we'd been out for more than a year. Crew! You lucky fellows have won the chance to serve aboard one of the sector's finest ships, the Retribution. Remember that name with pride and affection, and all else should come naturally.
Nathan must have looked confused because the stranger, a thin, dark man with tired eyes, whispered to him,
"It's the captain, here to welcome us aboard. Says it'll likely be the first and last time we sees him."
Nathan blinked and gazed about him. A vast, curving wall disappeared out of sight above them. It was pierced by arches showing a night sky speckled with stars. Halfway up it, a buttress gallery swelled outwards, and it was from there that the captain spoke. His voice must have been amplified somehow, because a normal man's voice would have been drowned by a distant rumble which seemed to radiate from the worn stone floor they stood upon. A jolt of panic shot through Nathan as he realised they must be aboard some ship. No, an Imperial warship, he corrected himself. Even as he watched, the stars in the windows were sliding across it almost imperceptibly. They were already underway. Nathan was inducted into a gun crew, number 6 gun of the port deck, known to its crew as Balthazar. Him, Kendrickson, the tired-eyed man who introduced himself as Fetchin, and 5 others were beaten, stripped, shaved, deloused, tattooed with their serial numbers, and issued with dun-coloured coveralls, apparently tailored so that their one size would fit no one. The gun officer for Balthazar, a Lieutenant Gabriel, seemed decent enough and didn't revel in their humiliation. He and his enforcers, his armsmen, simply crushed their individuality and made it clear that they were to obey orders and cause no trouble. He was even good enough to explain to them that men were a commodity on a warship, like food or fuel or ammunition. When the ship ran out, it came to a world to resupply. Simple as that. Even before the lieutenant had finished his little speech, Nathan had hardened his resolve to escape at the first opportunity. They were set to work in a gun room, a cavernous, hangar-like space which reeked of grease and ozone. It was part filled by cranes and gantries, but dominated by the breach of Balthazar, apparently some sort of gigantic cannon as big as a house and nested at the centre of an insane web of power coils, chains, coolant pipes, wiring, hydraulic rams, and less easily identified attachments. By the unspoken rule which applies to all new recruits, the old hands set them to work on the most mundane, laborious, and unwelcome tasks in the gunroom. In this, that meant long, hard work shifts, scraping off corrosion, which an old hand named Kron helpfully pointed out bloomed like weed in the moist, oxygen-rich air inside the ship. Or chipping away frozen coolant from branches of piping. They ate on the gun deck too, their food arriving on square metal trays through an aperture in the wall. Food breaks were accompanied by the arrival of the crewmen, the old hands referred to as armsmen. They came through one of the 2 heavy pressure doors that led into the gunroom, from the direction which Nathan had nominated as south. The armsmen wore leather harnesses over their coveralls and carried long clubs and stubby pistols or shotguns. They kept a respectful distance while the gun crew ate, but their attitude spoke of a readiness to do harm if necessary. Once the food was consumed and the trays returned to their slot, the armsmen left through the north door, presumably to perform the same, apparently pointless function in the next gunroom. Again, it was Kron who explained the purpose of the armsman's vigil to the new recruits.
"They're here to make sure everyone gets their own share, lads," Kron told them. "And that nobody takes what isn't theirs."
Fetchin seemed shocked. so you can't even keep a crumb for later? Or swap some with your mate?"
Kron's answering grin was an ugly sight, particularly because he, like many of the old hands, had been patched with steel over old injuries. In Kron's case, the tech priest had left him with a half skull of polished metal and set with a red glowing eye.
"Not unless you want a few extra lumps to nurse, no," he chortled.
Seeing disbelief still written on their faces, he added more quietly,
"Was a time, years ago, when we had a bad captain. He didn't keep a watch, boys. Was all right at first, the bully boys didn't take too much and no one starved. But then we were caught in a storm, between Esperance and the K-Star for months. The effort was torn apart by cross-chasers and remnants. So much that it was all the navigators could do to keep us from being lost. Pretty soon, men's hunger made them desperate, and desperate men will do terrible things."
Kron closed his real eye, blocking out bad memories. Nathan had seen plenty of desperate men around Unit Town in wet season, when work was scarce or non-existent. "I've seen floors swimming with blood after fights over a husk of bread. The captain's right to keep a watch," he said. Kron looked at him curiously for a moment and then nodded.
"That's right, lad. Better to be harsh now than deadly later."
Food was palmed and traded and fought over anyway, but in a quiet, cautious fashion, which Nathan suspected the armsman chose to overlook. Several times he tried to speak with Kendrickson, but each time his old rival ignored him, or, if Nathan pressed him harder, fled away from him. The old hands brooked no fighting, so Nathan took it no further. He judged that the old hands were right. Punishments for fighting were liable to be swift and brutal. At the end of each work shift, the crew slept in a low bunk room beneath the gun deck. Armsmen arrived to drive them below, although they needed little persuasion to drop their tools and find their way down into the gloomy, red-lit chamber. There were no exits from the bunk room, saving the hatch which led back up to the gun room. Cleansing and purging was undertaken in ridiculously small metal cubicles off the bunk room. Nathan watched and waited, but opportunities for escape never presented themselves. Soon, work shifts and sleep shifts rolled relentlessly past until all sense of time was lost. Until there was only toil and rest from toil, and then toil renewed. It was only after the ship had left the lave system and passed into warp space that Nathan began to understand why men were a commodity. The warp made everything different somehow. Even the cavernous gun deck felt claustrophobic and oppressive. As if immense pressures existed just beyond the hull. Then the dreams had started. Nightmares which left the mind dark and full of half-formed images upon waking. Some men screamed and wept in their sleep without knowing why. Others just grew more and more introverted and silent. Fetchim was one of these, and Nathan had seen a weird light coming into his eye long before it happened. It was the end of the work shift. The crew were straggling down the hatch to the bunk room, more reluctantly now that the dreams had come. Fetchim was last of all, listlessly scouring at the corrosion spot long after the others had moved away. The armsmen stepped forward with hard faces, and Fetchin backed away with a stooped, almost scuttling gait. Almost at the top of the ladder, Nathan stopped and turned, his mind fumbling for some encouraging words which might persuade Fetchin to go below. Before he could speak, Fetchin backed into another of the gun crew. The man cursed and roughly thrust Fetchin away. From there it seemed as if Fetchin was possessed by devils. He pounced on the man with a snarl and bore him down. A horribly throttled gurgle escaped the thrashing pair, and Fetchin rolled away, his lips and chin bloody with the ruin of the man's throat. Two men tried to pin the devil Fetchin's arms, but he slipped through their grasp like an eel. Raking clawed fingers across their eyes with a hysterical, wordless scream. The armsmen came pelting up, and the first to reach the scene swung at Fechin's shoulder with his long club, probably aiming to break his collarbone. The blow never connected. Fechin grasped the down-rushing arm with preternatural speed and swung the armsman away with a horrible cracking, popping sound which spoke of dislocated joints and snapping bones. The madman turned suddenly and bounded towards the bunkroom hatch. Men scattered as his last manic leap sent him hurtling straight at Nathan. Nathan saw the animal fire in Fechin's eyes in the age-long instant as he leapt and felt his guts turn icy. There was not a scrap, not a hint of the mild, world-weary colleague he had come to know. All reason was lost in that glare, and Nathan was frozen in it. Suddenly, Kron was between them, so quick that Nathan didn't even see him step in the way. Kron swept the flailing arms aside and punched two stiffened fingers into Fechin's windpipe before his feet had touched the ground. Fechin was knocked sprawling by the impact and let out a low growl as he skidded across the deck plates. Nathan felt shocked. Kron's deadly accurate blow should have left Fechin dead or unconscious, he felt sure. Click, clack, boom. The sound of the shot echoed around the gunroom. A frozen tableau was left in its wake. An armsman stood with shotgun levelled, smoke curling from the muzzle. Fechin slid down the bulkhead, leaving a bloody smear, a fist-sized wedge of raw flesh and entrails, blasted from his mid-drift. Nathan, splattered with still warm blood, not able to understand how Kron had moved so fast. The armsman drove them below with kicks and blows before another word was said. Kron was surprisingly kind and turfed out the old hand who bunked below him so that Nathan did not have to sleep beneath Fechin's empty berth. When they were brought up for the next work shift, a scoured spot on the bulkhead was all that was left of Fechin. Nathan woke to the sound of screaming. He lurched up with a half-strangled yelp, almost braining himself on the bottom of Kron's bunk. He stared wildly about him, gulping for breath. The oppressive red light of the bunkroom still surrounded him. The cloying odour of sour sweat and grease still fought the sharp tang of coolant in the air down here. The room was quiet save for the drip of the condensers and the assurance of night noises made by 40 sleeping men. Nathan wiped a shaky hand across his eyes and peered over towards Kendrickson. If anyone had screamed, it would have been Kendrickson. He had nightmares nearly every sleep shift. They all did, but Kendrickson just couldn't take it. Perhaps he had a guilty conscience, or perhaps he was just some dumb thief who was completely terrified by being shut up in one of the Emperor's warships. But Kendrickson's bunk was empty. He must have gone to relieve himself. The scream came again, but it was tiny and distant, carried along by the conduits from another bunk room. Pity the poor devils in there, thought Nathan. Every one of them wide awake and praying the screamer didn't go berserk and start clawing and biting at them. That he didn't turn into a wild beast like Fechin had. Nathan lay back in the narrow bunk and tried to recapture sleep. He tried to imagine all the other shipmen doing the same. Start with this gun deck. Kron had told him there were 40 guns with 40 crews each. That's 1,600. Another gun deck on the other side for 3,200. Then there were the lance turrets, port and starboard. Nobody seemed to know just how big the crews for those beasts were. Call in another 1,600 apiece. This was working well. His eyelids were drooping. That was 6,500 souls, give or take. The Torps probably had a crew much bigger than a single gun, but less than a whole deck. Maybe 1,000. That made 7.5. Engines must be at least 2,000 or 3,000 more. A rasping cough snapped him back to full wakefulness. A bittersweet cloud of smoke was drifting down from the bunk above. Nathan sighed. Kron. It was always Kron.
Ain't sleeping too good?
Nah. Bad dreams, Nathan replied. Kron was the oldest hand on the gun deck. Even Lieutenant Gabriel listened to him. Sometimes. So he'd often pay to listen too.
Really? Not like fetching, I hope.
Kron wheezed. It was a statement, or a cruel joke, not a question. Nathan decided to take it as a joke and chuckled quietly. No, not like fetching, he said. Just more dreams of the ship. Kron harumphed quietly, and another cloud of smoke wafted downwards. The feeble breath of the recycler is apparently insufficient to even pull it up and away.
It's lucky to dream of the ship, Kron said.
His voice sounded a little wistful to Nathan, as though Kron were talking to himself.
I used to dream of it a lot when I was young.
Nathan wouldn't like to have to guess Kron's years. Apparently age varied so much from one world to another that it was a long shot at best. Take into account all the warp time Kron must have had, and Nathan would be naming a figure somewhere between 60 and 300. In the time it took him to think that, a slivering sound came from above, and suddenly Kron was there, pipe in hand, right beside Nathan's bunk. The red light turned his polished skull, with its sharp nose and glowing eye, into a gargoyle's head. His living eye twinkled.
Come walk with me, young Nathan. Let's go up on the deck.
Nathan sat up and wearily eased himself out of the bunk.
What about the armsman? Nathan asked.
Kron just snorted and started to pick his way, soft as a cat, to the hatch. The gun room was dark, its spars and columns rearing up with cathedral-like splendour into a gloom broken only by the jewel-like gleam of ready lights and power indicators. They edged around to the far side of Balthazar over snaking cables, Kron sure-footed and Nathan trailing behind. As they rounded one of the pillars, Nathan froze as he heard a squeak of oiled leather. Kron stepped on and virtually walked into an armsman. The armsman brought up a torch and snapped it on, a little too quickly and awkwardly to have been lying in wait for them. Nathan slipped back around the pillar and out of sight, so he didn't hear what was said, but after a few muttered words, the armsman swung away, whistling a little ditty and heading for the far end of the gunroom.
You can come out now, lad, Kron called. Old Leopold won't bother us.
Nathan came forward. I'd thought they would never stoop to fraternising with gunners, the armsmen, I mean, he said.
Not while the others are about. But come sleep shift, they'll trade and talk like anyone else. Their crew just like us. Just trusted enough. To bear arms all the time.
Kron seated himself on a stanchion and gestured expressively to another. Nathan took a first glance around before wearily sitting also. Kron gazed at him steadily while he got out his pipe again.
So what's your story, young Nathan? He asked.
I don't have a story, Nathan replied carefully. If this is about Kendrickson, my business is with him alone, and I'll thank you not to intrude.
That earned an arched eyebrow, and Nathan suddenly felt he was mistaken. Kron hadn't brought him up here to find out what was going on between him and Kendrickson.
No, Kron said. I mean, tell a story. That's how it's done among shipmen. When we want to really talk, we tells a story. That way we can tell our secrets without saying them right out so others might hear.
When Kron said that, he looked meaningfully at the outer hall plates, which Nathan can see from here were covered with writings, layered one over the other, marching lines of faded Gothic script, which continued up and out of sight towards the ceiling. A sudden chill crept down Nathan's spine. He was sure he heard a vague creak of metal up at the north end of the gunroom. "What do you mean? What others?" he hissed. Kron raised a hand to stop him.
"That's just what I mean. Let me tell you a story about how mankind got among the stars. A tale of ancient times."
Kron began to speak clearly and surely, without the customary drawls and breaks in his speech. It was almost as if he were reading from a book, or reciting a tale told many, many times before.
"Once, long ago, man lived on just one island. The broad oceans surrounded him, and he believed himself alone. In time, man's stature grew, and he caught sight of other islands far off across the deep ocean. Since he had seen everything on his island, climbed every peak, looked under every stone, he became curious about the other islands and tried to reach them. He soon found the oceans too deep and called for him to get far, not nearly 1/100 of the way to the next island. So man returned and put his hand to other things for an age. But in time, food and water and air ran short on man's island, and he looked to the far islands again. Because he could not bear the cold of the ocean deeps, he fashioned men of stone to go in his place, and the stone men fashioned men of steel to become their hands and eyes. And the stone men went forth with their servants and swam in the deep oceans. They found many strange things on the Fire Islands, but none as strange or as wicked as the things that swam in the depths between them. Ancient hungry things, older than man himself. But these beasts of the deep hungered for the true life of man, not the half-life of stone. So the stone men swam unmolested. At first, all was well, and the men of stone planted man's seed on many islands. And in time, man learned to travel the oceans himself, hiding in stone ships to keep out the cold and the hunger of the beasts. All was well, and man spread to many islands far across the ocean, such that some even forgot how they came to be there, and that they ever came from just one island at all.
Kron's tale wound on, telling of how the stone men became estranged from humanity by their journeys through the void. This led to a time of strife, when the men of steel turned against their stone masters, and mankind was riven asunder by wars. 1,000 worlds were scoured by the ancient terrible weapons of those days, before the men of stone were overthrown, and 1,000,000 more burned as flesh fought steel. Worst of all, the beasts arose and were worshipped as gods by the survivors. Once proud and mighty, man was reduced to a rabble of grovelling slaves. Finally, one came who freed man from his shackles and showed him a new way to reach for the stars. This path was forged from neither stone nor steel, but simple faith. Faith guarded man from the beasts of the void, as steel or stone could never do. Nathan came to himself with a start. Kron's sonorous voice had lulled him into a strange, half-dreaming state. He looked back at the wall and its inscrutable scripture. Faith. Faith kept the beasts at bay. Beasts that turned men into creatures like Fechin. Each line of script covering the wall was a prayer to the God Emperor for protection. Centuries of devotion, layered like stratified rock, to keep whatever was out there. Out there. He could feel Kron's expectant gaze upon him, the red eye burning like a ruby star in the gloom. Nathan uncomfortably tried to ignore the scratching noises he thought he heard coming from the gloom. Just nerves, he told himself. Or rats, of course. Still, no harm in watching the shadows. I don't know many tales, Nathan hedged, trying to recall one about the Emperor or the Great Crusade. He felt Kron's tale must be a parable of ancient times, set before the Crusades. They were spoken of only through the preachings of the Ecclesiarchy. In the Laith system, a legendary time of righteousness and purity recalled in the Ministorum's most reverential sermons, usually as a comparison to the immorality and irreverence of modern times.
Tell us about you and Jon Kendrickson, then, Kron prompted.
Inwardly, Nathan cringed, but he sensed that Kron would be a big help to his chances of survival, let alone escape. And he had told a tale first. Wearily, Nathan began. Me and Kendrickson don't go back far, but in the short time I've known him, I've decided that I need to kill him. My youthful prospects were not exceptionally good. Truthfully, they were much given over to petty crime and associations with undesirables. However, thanks to Kendrickson, I am now an unwilling recruit in the Emperor's Navy. That appears to mean lifetime incarceration in a steel cube 20 paces across until death by insane shipmate, starvation, disease, or enemy action intercedes. This wasn't my first choice in life. Nathan stood suddenly. There was no doubt about it now. Someone or something was creeping towards them as stealthily as it or they could manage. He gently lifted a steel hook bar from the deck and held it ready. Kron, seeing his look and actions, similarly armed himself with a long spanner. All the while, Nathan kept talking so as not to alert their stalkers. He told Kron about how he and Kendrickson had both served on the Pandora, an aging lugger hauling ore and oxygen between the outer mines of Laith. He even told him about how they had both actually been in the pay of a businessman dedicated to transporting goods of a rare, valuable, and illegal nature with no questions asked. Nathan had just got to their last voyage on the Pandora and how Kendrickson had sold him out to the pirates when their skulking stalkers attacked. They came out of the shadows in a rush, three pale shapes and one dun-coloured one. Nathan made a two-handed swing at the first to reach him. The steel hook bar caught it on the side of the head with a meaty crack, and it dropped as if poleaxed. It was a man, pale, near naked, with a matted beard and bloodied shock of hair. A second leapt forward, jagged blade swinging, while Nathan was still recovering from his initial blow. He managed an awkward parry with the hook bar, and the man pulled his blade back for another hack. Nathan followed through with his block and crashed the end of the hook bar into the wild man's elbow, making him yell and drop the blade. The third dove in between them and drove Nathan back with a flurry of blows. He blocked a few strikes with the ungainly bar, but gave ground and almost stumbled on a trailing pipe. In desperation, he ducked under the cable conduit as his assailant made an overhead cut. The blade sliced into the shock lines in a shower of fat sparks. The man convulsed, and his face clamped into a rictus grin of agony as current flowed remorselessly between the blade, the deck, and through him. As Nathan dashed past him, He was starting to smoulder, the blade glowing orange in his death grip. The second man had retrieved his blade and made as if to strike as Nathan ran up, but the superior reach of the hook bar finally paid off. Nathan slammed it bodily into his ribs. The momentum of his charge skewered the man on its cruel head, splintering ribs and ripping open a gaping wound. Nathan abandoned the wedge bar and plucked the blade out of the man's fingers, giving thanks that his enemies seemed disorientated and slow, as if they were half-starved or dim-witted. Nathan sprang forward towards the last foe, a figure in shipman's coveralls, bending over the prone body of Kron. Nathan's napairs prickled as the man lurched up. Blue witch flame writhed about his limbs like angry snakes, and sparks poured from its fingertips. By some reflex, Nathan ducked away from a hissing bolt of energy, which lashed out from an outstretched hand. It still caught him across the left shoulder and sent fiery needles of agony lancing into his very bones. If he could have shouted in agony, he would have, but his lips only parted in a soundless gasp as a wave of numbness washed through him. Nathan fell to his knees on the deck and fought his unresponding body as it dragged him down, down. The figure stepped closer. Through blurring eyes, Nathan could see the complex weaving of tattoos beneath his skin, glowing through it with lightning brightness. Even the coveralls were rendered translucent by that glare, and bones stood out coal black as he raised a spectral hand in a gesture full of menace. With his final ounce of strength, he struck back at his foe the only way he could, hurling the blade stiff-armed as he slid to the deck. Before he blacked out, he felt a thunderclap of pressure and a wave of heat before blackness closed over him. Nathan's eyes flickered open. He pulled himself up to a sitting position and retched. Only moments had passed. Smoke was still rising from the corpse beside him, and the sweet stench of cooked flesh hung in the air. A thrown blade protruded from the corpse's larynx, and Nathan knew he should never gamble again after fluking that shot. But despite the blade, the massive burns across the body looked like they had been just as fatal. Vagrant flickers of static still trailed along rigor-stretched limbs. Nathan mustered his courage and stared into the blackened face. It was Kendrickson, patently no mere smuggler after all. He stepped well clear of the corpse as he staggered groggily to where Kron lay. Faint breath sighed from Kron's lips, and the burns on his body didn't look fatal. Nathan paused at this, his head throbbing and mouth dry with fear, and considered how he might be able to judge such a thing given his lack of experience. Regardless, he could not simply leave Kron lying insensible, so he decided to follow his instincts and attempt to revive him somehow. By shaking him and calling Kron's name, Nathan was soon rewarded with a moaning and stirring. Seconds later, Kron's real eye flickered open. His red gem eye remained dim.
Where am I? He whispered with trembling lips.
On the gun deck, Nathan replied. There was a fight. He broke off. Kron had raised his hands and was touching his metal half-skull and dim jewel eye.
It's still on me, he suddenly yelped. Get it off before it can crash start.
Nathan stood in shock. Kron's voice was different and he was starting to thrash around in a most un-Kron-like fashion. Nathan snatched for his wrist in fear that he might injure himself, and the strange voice grew shrill with panic.
No, don't let it take me! Don't let it!
Kron's new voice trailed away and his body slackened in Nathan's grip. As Nathan lowered him gently to the deck, he noticed Kron's jewel eye was flickering back to life.
"Aye, Nathan," Cron said, his voice normal. "Lost my way there for a sec. You were about to tell me how you escaped from the pirates."
Nathan stared at him. Cron seemed to have no recollection of the fight or his bizarre behaviour. Nathan squatted down, watching Cron carefully as he slowly looked about, taking in the carnage around him.
"There was a fight," Nathan explained again. "Kendrickson and some new friends tried to kill us. Well, perhaps just kill me and capture you."
Cron stood with no apparent signs of pain or weakness and walked over to Kendrickson's corpse, where he bent down and retrieved the half-melted spanner.
"I struck him with this," he told Nathan. "I didn't realise he was illuminant."
Cron fell silent, staring down at Nathan with that red, cyclopean eye for a long, long minute.
Nathan had a greasy feeling of fear in his stomach as he gazed back. Cron was obviously not entirely whole or sane. He had called Kendrickson illuminant, a word which stirred disturbing memories in Nathan's mind. It might be best not to remind Cron of his equally disturbing words and actions. Better now to find out about the Luminin, Kendrickson and his allies. Cron was holding Kendrickson's scorched head in his hands now.
"Why do you think they were out to catch poor Cron?" the old man asked.
Cron turned away to hide the act, but his hands still made an ugly cracking noise as they crushed Kendrickson's skull.
"I have absolutely no idea who they are," Nathan snapped, "let alone what they wanted with you. Kendrickson was, I don't know, possessed? What is Illuminin?"
Cron clicked his tongue a few times, a curiously mechanical sound like that of the Pandora's clattering old logic engine. Before he could reply, there was a flicker of light at the south end of the gunroom. Echoing shouts followed. Cron turned and scurried towards the north end without a word. After a second's indecision, Nathan followed, struggling to keep sight of Cron's disappearing back while not tripping on a cable or cracking his head on a stanchion. He caught up with Cron as he bent over a thick pipe in a shadowed corner beside the script-marked outer wall. The pipe was made of many rings of metal, half the height of a man. Cron pulled apart two of the rings and slipped inside, turning to hold the rings apart and jerking his head for Nathan to follow. He ducked within, realizing as the rings cracked back into place that he had heard the same noise before Kendrickson and his allies had attacked. They belly crawled along the pipe in silence, the way lit only by Cron's cyclopean eye. Bundles of wires ran along the bottom of the pipe, most filthy and blackened, but some more recent. Their bright colours in carmined by Cron's unflinching gaze. Dozens of dog-eared labels clung precariously to the different bundles. Many were torn off or unreadable. Others bore legends such as LWF Diff, AAZ/380, or AR.control126.13kW in careful Gothic script. The pipe gave out into a black crack, chasm deep, with cables spilling off into its depths like a frozen waterfall. Cron led Nathan onto a short bridge of pipes that crossed to the other wall, which was splotched with bright blobs of enormous silver, like soldering marks. At the far side, Nathan stopped, unnerved by Cron's continuing silence and the cold, lightless spaces he was being led into. "Time for some answers."
"Cron," he whispered, "where are we? And where do you think you're taking me?"
Cron turned to face him before replying.
She's an old ship, lad. She fought and sailed the void for nigh 18 centuries in the Emperor's fleet. And before that, she slept in the hulk for another 20. That's where I...
Kron clamped his mouth shut, and his eye blazed. He gazed around wearily before speaking again.
We're between the hull plates here. Yon weld marks are from where she took a salvo in the flank during the assault on Transcentia.
And where are we going?
Somewhere that's safe, where we can hide till the armsmen finish their search. Hide and talk in peace.
Won't the armsmen follow us down here?
Nay, lad. We out a fully armed servitor crew and a tech priest. They could ne'er use their guns for fear of cracking something,
Kron said. And where is this sanctuary of yours?
Not 10 strides yonder,
Kron pointed. Nathan took a long, hard look at the narrow ledge of rotting cables that ran along the wall from the end of the pipe bridge. His burnt and aching body already throbbed from the efforts he had forced it through after the fight. Now, as the flush of adrenaline left him and the icy chill in the air replaced it, he doubted his arms and legs could carry him on such a precarious path. He hesitated and swayed involuntarily on the bridge, which suddenly seemed rather precarious in itself, now he came to think about it.
Kron, I don't think...
Too late, the old man was swinging off along the ledge with the agility of a monkey. With him, the wan red light that served as the only illumination was vanishing fast. Nathan hesitated only a moment before a hot flush of anger drove him forward onto the ledge. He'd be damned if he would let this walking enigma disguised as an old man abandon him in the dark and potentially more of Kendrickson's feral alloys. He grasped a shoulder-high seam of wiring and pulled himself firmly over to get a foot on the cabling, trusting his weight to it as he pulled his other foot into place. Bloody-minded determination hauled him along 3 paces of the ledge. He made 2 more with his heart in his mouth and fingers fumbling blindly for purchase on the wires before his foot slipped off the cables. His body swung out alarmingly, and only his recently gained handholds on the wiring seam stopped him pitching off the treacherous ledge. He desperately scrambled to get his foot back on it. His hands were as weak as water, and his heart was thumping so hard his arms quivered. After a few seconds of naked terror, he got his foot back on and hugged himself to the wall, teetering as his legs shook. He couldn't let go of the wiring now. His legs were too weak to trust, and his arms couldn't hold his weight for much longer. He couldn't go forward. He couldn't go back. Every iota of his strength was necessary just to hold him where he was, with the blackness below sucking at his remaining scraps of vigour. Nathan clutched closer still to the wall and plucked up his courage, carefully shuffling 1 foot along the cabling. He shifted some weight to it and, shakily, drew the other foot closer. With a supreme effort of will, he unhooked 1 hand from the wires and reached out to grasp them further along. Then he rested and sweated before shuffling his foot forward again. So he went for the remaining 5 paces. Slide, grip, shuffle, rest. Slide, grip, shuffle, rest. Slide, grip. Nathan almost fell into the opening when he came to it. The horrible sensation that he might fall off just as he pulled himself to safety was almost overwhelming. Once inside the opening, he sat trembling for only a moment before summoning the energy to crawl further away from the edge. The interior of the narrow space looked like the choir stall of some ministerium chapel. Narrow seats crammed along either wall beneath Gothic arches of tubular metal. At the far end, a porthole of stained glass was lit fitfully from behind by swirling colours. Kron stood silhouetted against the glass. He turned to face Nathan, and pressure doors rolled shut behind him.
shutting the dank breath of the crevasse outside. "Well done, lad. I was thinking you weren't going to make it."
His voice sounded as smooth and calming as the raspy little goblin could make it.
"What the hell did you leave me alone out there for?" Nathan demanded. "To see if you are as tough as you think you are." "Oh, really? And do I pass muster?"
"I'll be needing to hear the end of your story to know."
"That's got something to do with this?"
"Come on, lad. I can tell by the look in your eyes that you don't think that's true. Coincidence is just a name that fools use for events they don't understand."
Nathan blinked as Kron gave a mental shrug. What harm could it do to finish the story if it gave Kron one less thing to be evasive about?
"All right. But then you better give me some answers or I'll crawl right back out of here and tell it to the armsman. As I said, I opened the inner hatch to the cargo bay. Once it was open, I overrode the outer hatch controls and hung on tight. I knew the drums in the bay were badly secured because me and Kendrickson had been too busy watching each other to make a decent job of it. The outer hatch blowing was enough to break them free and dump them into the void between the Pandora and the pirates. I was almost crushed by the stampede of metal cylinders, but by the Emperor's grace and a strong grip, I was able to keep a hold and stayed on the ship instead of being flung out among the cartwheeling drums outside. A few seconds later, the first drum connected with the docking thrusters of the pirate ship. I'd been playing for time, just hoping to upset their approach, but the drums were filled with liquid oxygen. The touch of the thrusters was enough to make them explode like bombs. Dozens of the cylinders exploded in slow motion, the tendrils of fire reaching back further into the clouds and detonating the rest. The escalation scared me badly, and I hauled myself within the inner hatch and closed it in an instant before the expanding bubble of flames washed across the Pandora. The deck bucked and a handful of drums, which had not escaped with their fellows, rolled round and clashed angrily. In a second, the shockwave had passed and I looked out of the hatch to see the pirate ship spiralling off, fires clinging to it and debris leaking from it like a blood trail. I went forward and up to the bridge where that slob, Captain Larg, was defecating his breeches. Larg claimed that Kendrickson had held him at gunpoint and forced him to cut the engines and wait for the other ship. Minutes before the explosion, Kendrickson had taken a raft and left the ship. Naturally, he had taken all of the archaeotech we had been smuggling with him. I was surprised when I heard Kendrickson had been seen in Junettown on Laith. I'd thought he was dead or long gone. I knew I could pick up a bounty for his head, so I went hunting for him in the back alleys, which is home turf for me. But both me and Kendrickson were seized by men from the Retribution, and this is how I began my new career in the Imperial Navy.
"You never actually knew Kendrickson?"
Kron asked softly.
"No, I knew him, worked with him, but he avoided me and most people from what I heard. He was a guy so weird he didn't even have a nickname. He was just Kendrickson. And that said it all. All right, I've told you my tale. Now it's time for you to give me some answers. No stories, just tell me the truth. Who were those men with Kendrickson?"
Nathan glanced at Kron, daring him not to answer, to push him over the edge into screaming fury.
"Them's muties. Shipmen that spent too long sailing the void and lost their faith. The beast song's in their heart now, and they live like lice on the innards of the ship. Sometimes they'll even grab compartments and feast on the poor ship boys if they can. Once in a century, the captain will put the ship into port and flush her guts with poison to clear them out. But tween times, there's always muties in the crossways and trunks. Seeing as we're in a big war right now, there's more than ever, and they'll be looking to call the beasts aboard all the time. Invite them in, as it were. Out there's whole squadrons who succumb to beasts in men's hearts in past times. Ones, I reckon, will be fighting soon enough. Kendrickson probably pretended he was possessed to scare him into obeying him. The pirate ship you saw, did it have a mark on it, a rune or a sigil?"
"Yes, it did,"
Most do. I don't see. Did you see it well enough to know it again?
Yes, but I'm asking the questions now. Nathan had recovered enough energy to stand and hauled himself up to face Kron.
What's Illuminin? I asked you before and you didn't answer, but now you're going to tell me. What made Kendrickson Illuminin, and how did that give him lightning in his veins and the power to melt steel like wax?
Nathan took a step closer, looming over Kron in the narrow space.
Tell me.
Kron grinned up at him before turning and pointing at the stained glass.
I bet your pirate symbol looked like that.
Nathan gaped. The intricate geometric design of the window centered around a central icon. A halo of gold with rays so short and square that they looked like crenellations on a castle wall. In the center was a grinning skull, picked out in loving detail with strands of platinum wire and swirls of crushed diamond. He snapped his gaze back to Kron.
What does it mean? It answers both our questions, lad. Kendrickson and yon pirates came from the same place. They made him Illuminin, took him and made crystal stacks of his bones and electrographs of his brain. Gave him skin plants and electus so he could summon lightning and channel it and much more. He was a war child and the machine god. What the uninitiated call an electro priest, though not one in 100 can hide his power and look like a normal man like he did.
The machine god? You mean the tech priest of Mars, don't you? The Adeptus Mechanicus?
Kron nodded solemnly, and Nathan suffered a painful insight into the awesome power that organizations wielded within the all-powerful Imperium. Tech priests ministered to machines and engines on every civilized world, every interstellar ship. The Navy might manage ships, but the tech priests ran them. Their prayers and runes brought life to cold dead metal, and their forge worlds produced weapons in their billions for the Emperor's eternal war against aliens, heretics, and traitors. In theory, at least, killing Kendrickson made him one of the latter. A sobering thought indeed.
All right then. What's this place? Those look like shuttle controls. Am I right in presuming that it's an escape pod of some sort?
Aye, lad. A cutter. Good for a planetary op if you don't mind waiting, as she's a bit slow.
Given what I've just heard, I'd jump ship now, if we weren't in the warp.
Death by fulguration if they catch you,
Kron muttered with an honest-looking shudder.
Well, we can't go back. If they find out who Kendrickson was and who killed him, I'd wager they'll come up with something even more unpleasant.
Nay, lad. If anyone knew who Kendrickson was, he wouldn't have been in the gunroom. Tech priests only come to repair battle damage and such.
So Kendrickson was originally out to get back the archaeotech for the tech priests and got press-ganged accidentally. But why didn't he tell the Navy who he was? They would have let him go for sure.
Many times a servant or the Emperor bury their real selves behind false memgrams and such. Makes them hard to ferret out, even with soul seers. Their real purpose is running the background. Watching the puppet show through the eyes and ears until they're in a position to accomplish their mission. Then they become a whole different person. The Illuminin part was just standing by for orders. But it must have decided that you needed killing to keep its past buried.
Kron let that sink in for a second before passing judgment on the matter.
No one'll know we did it for him if we get back there before roll call. Except Leopold, maybe. And he ain't gonna say for fear of being called derelicts.
Nathan was safe as long as Kron didn't rat on him, but he had a feeling that Kron was happy to keep their secrets for the time being. They were partners in crime.
I'm willing to bet that there's another way back into the crew quarters without crossing the gunroom.
Kron grinned.
Haj?
Ezia?
Kendrickson.
The sergeant-at-arms leapt over and whispered something to Lieutenant Gabriel,
who paused over the great ledger he had opened before him. Nathan swallowed hard. This was where Kron's theory came to the crunch. Getting back from the cutter had been easier than he had hoped. A narrow culvert led back from the crevasse into the cubicles by the bunk room. Nathan had carefully memorized every twist of the trunking and was determined to go back and familiarize himself further with it the very next sleep shift. But for now, he must see whether the Angel of Retribution was at Kendrickson's side or not. Lieutenant Gabriel gazed at the assembled company, eyes blinking as if he were struggling to recall Kendrickson's face. He turned and murmured a question to the sergeant, who shook his head curtly in response. Gabriel made a small mark in the ledger and continued. Crate, Carmoth. Roll call held an additional pleasant surprise when Lieutenant Gabriel assigned the duty roster. Nathan found himself placed on the Opticon crew. His momentary puzzlement was soon answered when it became clear that he was to be Kron's apprentice. He stole a look at the old man, who had looked blandly innocent, of course, and made a mental note of the apparent influence he could wield. Nathan wondered what the role of apprentice entailed, and for that matter, what the Opticon was. A dim memory floated forward that the Opticon was involved in observation outside the ship. He certainly knew that the Opticon crew usually worked high up on the main gantries, above Balthazar's breach, on what amounted to an extra half-deck, a good 12 metres up, spiral steps of skeletal ironwork. Whatever the duties, they could scarcely be as onerous and repetitive as the labours he was tasked with at present. As he ascended, he could see other members of the gun crew moving to repair the damage he and Kron had caused in their desperate fight. The bodies were gone, but charred cabling and slashed conduits were visible. Nathan wondered grimly how often they had repaired such damage without knowing its cause. The adage that ignorance is bliss seemed to dominate shipboard life, but with good cause if what Kron had said about the muties was true. The grim pressures of the warp travel became all the more nightmarish with the thought that there were malevolent entities clustered beyond the hull. Beasts that thirst for human lives and souls, whose subconscious calls drove men mad. Nathan suddenly stopped climbing the steps, as the thought struck him that he was going to help Kron observe those beasts and the Empyrean, the alternate dimension that they swam in. The curses of the men behind him move on, accompanied by a perverse desire to see the sinister beasts. He had mixed feelings when he reached the raised deck and saw a row of 5 shuttered arches lining the hull wall. There were 10 in the Opticon crew, and the burly rating named Isaiah placed 2 men at each shutter. At first, Nathan and Kron busied themselves greasing the shutter runners and cogs at its head and foot. After a quarter watch or so, Isaiah received a message from the comm box he carried and relayed an order to raise the shutters. Kron smartly threw a lever and the shutter rose smoothly up to reveal an expanse of black glass which rose higher than his head and as wide as his outstretched arms. As Nathan glanced around at the other crew, he noted a sense of nervous anticipation behind their actions, as if raising the shutters was an act of hidden significance. Nathan was still gazing expectantly at the black glass when the scream of a siren shook him rigid. The titanic blast of noise seemed to make the very deck plates tremble and was followed by a booming voice which rang like the word of the God Emperor. "Alert stations, all stations!" Kron turned and ran for a set of lockers at the side of the Opticon chamber, hotly pursued by the rest of the crew. The men started pulling on pressure suits, which Kron dragged from the lockers. The significance of the situation was becoming readily apparent to Nathan by now. They were going into battle very soon. Those ridiculously cumbersome-looking heavy, rubberized pressure suits and thick, bold helmets could be all that stood between them and the void.
To his surprise, Nathan managed to finish clamping himself into a suit before anyone else. The helmet locked down onto a broad ring across the shoulders of the suit, but had a vision made up of different layers, the last of which was little more than a slit in the armoured plate. He slid back all the layers and saw Kron had done the same. Nathan felt relieved that he wouldn't have to breathe the stale, sweaty air inside the suit just yet. "How long does this oxygen last?" he asked Kron, tapping the dented brass cylinder plumped into the side of the suit's chest.
"A watch or so for something as big as you."
"Just 8 hours. They don't want us to get any ideas about wandering off, do they?"
"You can always get more air on the ship, and if you part company with the ship, and you're not picked up, they wouldn't be able to find you anyway. You'd be drifted too far into the void."
"All right, what do..." The deck lurched beneath their feet, and there was a sickening sensation of falling for a second. Asaya shouted at him to get to their stations. Nathan nodded that the rating now bore a pistol and what looked suspiciously like a shock mortar, and sprang to his post as best as the heavy suit's boots would allow. The monolithic siren blasted twice. A commanding voice spoke.
"Battle stations, brace for impact!"
The deck shuddered and dropped again. This time the falling was longer. Nathan slid the visor down, grabbed a stanchion and braced his legs. He felt sick and hollow. The suit was stifling. He fought an urge to tear the helmet off and scream his lungs out. An insistent, intellectual part of his brain kept telling him to be calm and that the ship was simply preparing itself and surging majestically into battle. But the animal instinct of his body felt every jar and shake as an infernal choir of death screams. The ship lurched and fell again. This time Nathan actually felt his feet leave the floor. He felt as though part of him was being torn away. All the roiling emotion in his body began coalescing into a tearing sense of dislocation. A tangible shock ran along the length of the ship and Nathan realised they had left warp space. The black glass of the Opticon flashed white and then cleared to show a scene of awesome beauty. A night sky bisected by titanic thunderheads of cloud reared above a fiery sunset. Static lightning cobwebbed the depths and climbed up to blush the clouds with purple. Stars stood out sharp and clear, their own fires made to seem cold by their distance. "The void never looked so beautiful or terrible before," Nathan whispered. His fear drained away by the majesty of it all. Kron's voice crackled in his earpiece.
"That's right, lad. 'Cause through this glass you see, as the ship does, heat, light, magnetism, radiance and etherics are all clear to her."
Kron slid out a large circular lens which was attached to the window frame by a system of brass rods and runners. The thick frame of the lens held 2 number counters and 2 raised icons. Kron expertly tracked it across the surface of the window. The numbered wheels of the counter span in response, 1 horizontal, 1 vertical. The ship shuddered again, and Nathan swayed against the window, his helmet ringing off the unyielding surface alarmingly. The sensation of almost being pitched out into the void was enough to make his palms sweat inside the cursedly thick gloves. As he straightened up, Isaiah was barking orders to the crew to search different coordinates. Kron slid the lens across until the metricolators showed 238-00 by 130-00. Their search area. At that point, the lens resolved a dark area which had shown occasional vagrant twinklings into an asteroid field. Rolling mountains of stone lit by the stars' very light.
"What are you looking for, Kron? Just rocks?" Nathan asked with shaky levity.
The old man was tracking the lens back and forth across the field with deft, economical movements. Each time he reached its periphery, he depressed one of the runes, and the tumbling stones shown in the lens were outlined in red, with strings of numbers showing speed and distance, which remained in the glass after the lens slid away.
"Anything that might show us where the foes are lurking? A glint here or a bloomer eat there?"
Kron never took his eye from the lens as he spoke. Nathan slid back his topmost armoured visor so that he could see better.
You mean engine heat trails like those? He stated, pointing to a set of needle-thin arcs that shimmered near the edge of the field.
Contact! Mark 240 by 137!
Kron roared. Isaiah shouting it back, word for word over the crackling comm. The lens now showed broad, vaporous trails of red which curved back around the furthest asteroid. There looked to be four to Nathan, although they were already merging and dissipating.
They're closing in, lad! I can smell it!
Kron tracked the lens along the trails and cursed as they disappeared behind a glowing streamer of dust. Moments later, an incandescent spearhead of heat blossomed out of the cloud. Dust and lightning rolled off it in plumes as the lenses starkly announced it as enemy vessel, class unknown, 51000, closing. A burst of activity on the deck below drew Nathan's attention. Through the grill floor, he could see Balthazar's breech had been swung open and the gunners were hurling flat packs covered in short spikes into the open moor. Even through his fixed suit, he could hear the gunners' cheers as they slammed the submunitions home. On the lens, light and shadow now etched out the enemy, showed the silhouettes of their crenellated battlements and barred buttresses as the spearhead rolled a beam on the white-hot slabs of myriad thrusters. Grand Cruiser, the display read. Repulsive class. A ripple of seared flame geysered from the repulsive's flank as she completed the turn, and a storm of black specks arrowed towards them. Nathan gasped in horror as a heartbeat later the specks started to explode in gouts of flame. At first they looked distant, small puffs of colour against the void. But the projectiles kept coming, surging forward through the fiery chains to detonate in turn. In moments, their view of the enemy was obscured by a firestorm which rippled ever closer. The flames filled every window in the opticon by the time Nathan slammed his visor fully shut. The repulsive salvo crashed down on the ship itself with hurricane force. Nathan staggered as the deck rolled beneath him and a mighty rushing wind roared beyond the hull. A lash of dazzling purple light blazed through the glass, cutting the incendiary cloud like elemental lightning. It was gone in an instant before it returned in a retina-burning sweep which slammed into the ship with bone-jarring impact. Nathan's spine crawled with the sensation of unseen energies straining and crackling before a rush of scorching heat washed over him. At last he was glad of the suit's compass and protection, though even with it he felt as though he had been suddenly cast into a great oven. The heat was a palpable thing, pushing down on him like a great hand and burning his throat as he tried to breathe. Nathan saw several of the opticon crew collapse into pathetic heaps, one with flames licking about him. After what seemed like hours, it can only have been seconds of heart-stopping fear, the burning suddenly stopped, leaving a horrible tang of smouldering rubber inside his helmet. Sirens blasted, and an almighty voice boomed over the chaos.
Port weapons, prepare to lock on. Target mark 269 by 160.
Iron discipline drove the shipmen to their task, that and the grim instinct that to live they must fight and win. The ship had been wounded, but it could still fight back. Fires were doused, the dead and injured dragged away. The firestorm was lessening, and a moment later the decks ceased to rattle as the ship finally burst clear of the enemy's salvo pattern. Kron's breath rasped in Nathan's earpiece as they slid the lens back over the Grand Cruiser contact. The retribution was coming across the enemy's bow, and the matriculator's count showed the enemy as closing.
Lock on!
Kron activated the second rune on the lens frame. A stylized cog, superimposed by the Imperial Eagle, sprang into existence within the lens. But the runners seemed to be jammed, and Nathan had to help him drag the device over the target contact. The lens showed the ornate spearhead foreshortening into a shark-finned ziggurat of bronze as they pulled across the front of her. Where the iron rested, the hull of the Grand Cruiser was illuminated as if by a ghostly radiance which played over shimmering walls of force.
Fire main batteries!
The lights dimmed for a moment
as capacitors charged, and then the ship resounded with the clamour of guns. Nathan felt the pressure of unseen forces hit him like a slap as 40 guns hurled their payloads across the void. A moment later, he saw the spreading cloud of projectile cleaving towards the enemy. No spreading storms of fire this time. The munitions detonated right beneath the enemy's prow. Invisible walls fell beneath the onslaught, and a rain of destruction crashed across the battlements of the Ziggurat fortress. Debris halos puffed from it like smoke rings. Fire main lance arrays! Ravening white spears of pure power stabbed at the foe, tearing red glowing gouges across its hull. Globs of molten metal spun away, and flames leapt from the wounds. The Grand Cruiser lurched visibly under the impacts and began to twist away from the salvo. Even as it did so, two heat trails appeared from behind the Grand Cruiser, coming up fast to slash at its rear with a spiraling net of laser bolts. Nathan felt a rush of relief. The other two ships must be allies, and now their mutual enemy was caught between two fires. Below, the gunners were rushing to reload Balthazar for another shot, while a small team struggled to pin a whipping power line which sparked furiously. He looked back at the lens in time to see a swarm of bright flares pulling away from the enemy cruiser's prow, ominously. The tiny heat trails curved to alter course towards them, and it soon became apparent that although these new weapons were not as fast as the projectiles fired before, they were considerably bigger. Sirens blared.
All stations, prepare to repel boarders!
The relief Nathan had felt rapidly evaporated. The enemy must have launched boarding torpedoes, simple attack craft packed with troops, bombs, incendiaries, corrosives, nerve agents, and other hellish weapons necessary to wreak havoc if they got abroad. It was bad enough to be caught up in the titanic duel between warships, but now the enemy was coming to strike at them face to face, all the time with the prospect of being crushed like an insect by the pulverizing contest going on outside. Azaya rapidly passed out weapons from an arms locker, blades, shock mauls, stubby auto pistols, and chunky shotguns. Nathan found himself equipped with a worn-looking pump gun and a clip of shells. He risked a glance at the window as he was fumbling to slot the shot-filled cylinders into the breech of the gun. They now showed finger-long missiles with beaked brows, pairing, as it seemed, straight for him on harsh coronas of light. The sirens blared a repeating four-tone alarm.
Port turret stations, open fire!
Nathan cursed as he dropped a shell onto the grating. His fingers felt like sausages in the thick suit gloves. Outside, lasers sketched livid traceries across the void as the short-range turrets laid down their barrage. Shells and missiles exploded in gouts of orange incendiaries as the Retribution's barbettes joined in. The first rank of the big projectiles were consumed or broken open, and tiny, struggling figures spilled into the void as they spiraled away. But still, more torpedoes surged through the barrage and angled in, cutting their flaring drives on a final approach. Nathan slammed the last shell into place and carefully pumped the action to chamber around. At the last instant before impact, the torpedoes appeared to swell enormously, becoming as big as shuttles before they disappeared from view. A ringing impact threw Nathan to the quivering deck, and an endless cacophony of screaming, tearing metal followed. It was so loud it made him quail at the bone-crushing violence of it, of the sheer force that was ripping through meters of armour plate to breach the hull. Finally, the tearing slowed and stopped until only the screams of injured gunners and the hiss of escaping air penetrated Nathan's helmet. The Opticon deck had twisted, and now part of it sagged away towards the lower deck. Nathan crawled to the edge and saw there was terrible carnage below. A great crocodile snout of steel and brass projected through the hull plates near Balthazar's breach. Deck plates were twisted back. Stanchions and pipes had been bent into an insane ironwork jungle with flowers of steam and spraying fluids. The surviving gunners were taking up defensive positions, aiming their assortment of shotguns and pistols at the invaders. As they did so, cannons coughed into life around the crocodile's snout. Gun flashes strobed as auto-weapons hammered explosive rounds across the interior of the gunroom. Men were blasted asunder where the rounds struck, and hot shrapnel wickered around the metal hulls, injuring others. The snout was grinding open now, and a horde of nightmarish figures spilled out to add their fire to the fight. At first they appeared like men in the flickering light, but their insane glee marked them apart. They capered as the gunners' pitifully few weapons tore into them, filling that crocodile maw with twitching bodies. They roared with mad laughter as they blazed back with their own guns and threw devilish bombs which burst into pools of hungry, incandescent flame. Nathan sighted on a twisted figure as it pulled back its arm to throw. The pump gun crashed and the figure fell into a burning pool of its own making. The flame spread, engulfed the crocodile snout, and the next two who tried to rush through it were eaten alive by the incendiary. Even so, a group of the attackers were out in the gunroom now, dashing through the wreckage to hurl themselves at the gunners. Vicious hand-to-hand combat broke out across the deck, the foe's hooks and crooked blades crashing against the gunners' pry bars and line gaffs. The pump gun was useless now, the melee had reduced all ordered fighting to a shambles. "We've got to help them," Nathan shouted to Kron. Kron's helm nodded ponderously back, and they both slid themselves down the twisted opticon deck to drop down onto the gun deck. Asaya and two other survivors of the opticon crew followed, and they waded into the brawl in a loose knot. Nathan used his gun as a club, smashing the skull of a black-clad figure who was about to gut a fallen gunner. He winced as the gun crunched into its misshapen head, fearing the aging weapon would fall apart in his hands. He pumped the action to chamber around to reassure himself it still could, just as two figures leapt at him out of the smoke. Their mad eyes glared from behind leather hoods, looking so like Fetchin that Nathan almost hesitated before he blasted one in the midriff with the shotgun. He pumped the slide to chamber another round, but it jammed halfway. Cursing, he swung the gun up to block a saw-bladed knife as the other foe slashed at him, but he was borne back as his attacker leapt bodily into him, pinning the useless gun between their bodies. Panic stole Nathan's strength as he struggled against this maniacal attack. Drool spilled across his face as the creature tore away his helmet with its free hand and pushed him to the deck. Nathan dropped his gun and scrabbled to keep a grip on the knife hand as his foe leaned its weight against it, pushing it inexorably towards his exposed neck. For a long second, Nathan saw every detail of the thing astride him with horrible clarity. Flames billowed behind a head made jagged by short horns thrusting out through its leather mask. Cartilage-textured tubes twisted in and out of its flesh like parasitical worms. It was either naked or covered in human hides marked with brands and stigmata. It stank like a weak old corpse, and it muttered mad, excited prayers as it bent to the task of murdering him. If what he'd been told was true, this thing must have been human once. Every shred of its humanity was gone now, eaten up by insane gods that had reduced it to living offal that worshipped its own butcher. Sickness lent Nathan an awful strength, a burning desire to wipe out these horrors that had been unleashed on them. With a supreme effort born of revulsion, Nathan shoved the creature back. Suddenly, it convulsed, then slumped, and its dead weight bore him down again. Nathan rolled free to see Kron pulling an axe from the abomination's neck. Isaiah and the others had disappeared into smoke, only corpses surrounding Nathan and Kron. Nathan's helmet visor had been smashed, rendering it useless. Without it, he realised how thin the air was becoming. The flames all around were turning ghostly as they hungrily ate at what remained. Even the screams and sounds of combat were becoming subtly muffled. "We have to stop them getting aboard!" Kron shouted to him through his own damnably intact helmet. Nathan nodded his understanding, grabbing up some firebombs from the corpse and found a short halberd from among the fallen, before heading for the heart of the inferno. He felt filled with a kind of righteous fury at the turn of events. Like things couldn't get any worse and it was time for some payback. Somebody had to pay for him landing up in a situation as dire as this, and with Kendrickson already dead, it was going to have to be their insane, murderous enemy. The snout stood open as before, the flames were dying away in its maw, and Nathan could see more twisted figures gathering to rush through.
He fumbled to find an activation stud on the rune-etched bomb before giving up and simply lobbing it as the figures started to run forward. Then another and a third from Kron, turning the entryway into a sea of corrosive fire as the bombs burst on impact. Nathan turned to shout to Kron, an instant before an armored giant burst through the conflagration with a brazen roar. Before Nathan could react, the heavy pistol in its fist barked twice and Kron was thrown back with a flash and a shower of blood. Nathan felt an icy bolt of fear trying to force his feet to run, but it was already too late. The figure charged forward with nightmarish speed, an ironclad monster of myth, skull-helmed and laden with death, a screeching chainsword in its other fist, slashing down at him in an unstoppable arc. Nathan hurled himself aside and brought up the halberd to block the slash. It was a mistake. The power of the blow threw him back, jolting his arms as the shrieking teeth of the saw tore chunks from the halberd's steel haft in a shower of sparks. The giant wielded its huge blade with ease, and in a blink of an eye, its shrieking blade circled and swept down at him again. Nathan leapt back, but the sweep of the chainsword tore the head from the halberd and slid along the arm of his suit, chewing through it and tearing at his flesh. A cold flush of painlessness told Nathan that the injury was severe. His body was already trying to shut out the agony. In desperation, Nathan thrust the jagged end of the halberd into the thing's barrel chest. It rang off an armoured plate and buried itself deep in a nest of cables beneath where its ribs should have been. The giant warrior didn't even flinch as it sent him sprawling with a blow from its heavy pistol. Death was close. One of his eyes was blind and Nathan felt an abnormal calm as he accepted that these were his last seconds of life. The world seemed to slow to an instant crawl as the armoured warrior stepped towards him, raising its keening sword for a killing blow. Nathan felt only a pang of disappointment that he would never know more of Kron's strange wisdom. So much must have died with him. The pounding of Nathan's last heartbeats sounded like a distantly thumping drum. Thump. One armoured boot crunched down. Flecks of blood span away from the motion-captured teeth of the chainsword as it soared upwards. Nathan looked down at his right arm and saw it was crimson from shoulder to wrist. Everything wavered as he started to black out. Thump. The other boot crashed down. The blade was raised almost to the top of its arc. Nathan was aware of movement where Kron had fallen, and a tiny spark of hope flared that he might still be alive, might save Nathan somehow, if only he were quick and could defeat this unstoppable colossus. Logic sneered at his paltry hopes from the dark recesses of his brain. Thump. The blade began to sweep down, gathering momentum. Nathan's world was shrinking, the vision from his remaining eye darkening until he could barely see. Paltry hopes and all conscious thought were corroded away by the sea of agony raging through his arm. Thump. Nathan saw the blade had entered his dimmed world, and part of him welcomed it, teeth flashing bright as a shark's hungry smile in the gloom. The pain would be over soon. That could only be good. A spectral hand seemed to be reaching over him to touch the blade, as if the God Emperor himself were placing a benediction on his slaughter. The hand was crawling with blue fires and sparks cascading from its fingertips. Thump. A flash of light leapt from hand to blade, and with it the chainsword exploded and it was hurled away from the giant's fist. The hulking warrior staggered and started to raise his pistol. Kron stepped forward into Nathan's circle of vision and raised a hand. Thump. A ravening bolt of brilliance crackled from Kron's hand onto the warrior's chestplate and rent it asunder in a thunderclap. The mighty figure was thrown off its feet, its pistol sending explosive rounds flashing off wildly from its owner's convulsing death spasms. Thump. The chainsword, molten and twisted, rang down on the deck plates. Nathan clasped his left arm to his right shoulder and instantly felt warmth flood through his blood-slick wounds. The armoured warrior crashed to the deck besides its smoking sword. Nathan tried to breathe more deeply to clear his head, but found he couldn't. The orange flames all around were shrinking into bluish flickers. The air was nearly gone. Kron squatted down beside him as the ship shook, as if from some internal explosion.
Nathan could see the chest of Kron's suit was shredded and bloody. A death shot, surely. Wreckage dislodged by the shockwave crashed down nearby with horrible clangor. Kron didn't even flinch as he calmly removed his helmet. As the helmet came away, Kron's eye blazed as never before. It was glowing with the fierce light of a furnace. Nathan tried to blot out the horrible intensity of the glare in his dimmed world, but couldn't. It bored into him so that it seemed like Kron the man was shrunk to nothing more than a wraith, that the crimson brilliance trailed behind it like smoke. Kron's lips moved, but Nathan had to strain to hear their faint whisper through the rarefied air.
"Don't you worry, shipmate. Kron'll see to you."
"Lumen!"
Nathan gasped.
"No," Kron whispered.
Nathan's body was trembling uncontrollably as shock set in. His vision had almost dimmed completely, apart from a harsh red light floating nearby.
"Not at all."
A helmet clamped down over Nathan's head, dimming the light and bringing a welcome darkness. Nathan awoke on the floor of the hidden cutter. His arm was in a sling, and a bandage covered one of his eyes, but he otherwise felt rested and healthy. Kron was sitting in one of the narrow pews, watching him.
"How'd you feel?"
he inquired with genuine concern.
"Good," Nathan grunted as he sat up. "How long was I out?"
5 hours. I took time to fix you up, and me too, and rest some, before we go back up to the gun room."
Nathan felt a sense of relief. He had feared Kron would ask him if he wanted to jump ship. The aftermath of a battle offered the best chance Nathan would likely get for an escape to go unnoticed. But somehow, the prospect seemed a lot less appealing now he had seen what was out there, waiting for mutineers and faithless men to fall into its clutches. In fact, Nathan was feeling an unfamiliar amount of regard for the God Emperor after his experiences, a craving for the protection the Ecclesiarchs promised could be granted from the blessing of the Holy Master of Mankind. But that left him in here with Kron. Not a looming Kron who could defeat a champion of the Mad Gods with his own lightning. No ordinary gunner, for sure. A servant of the Emperor? Somehow Nathan didn't think so. If anything, he really did look like a gargoyle in this setting. A red-eyed piece of malevolence that had detached itself from the stonework and come down to blaspheme among it. Perhaps someone hiding out then, disguised among a faceless mass, yet always moving from one world to another. It would be a superb cover, unremarkable, beneath attention, and yet guarded by the awesome might of an imperial warship. Ultimately, whatever other misgivings Nathan might have, Kron had saved his life, and that put him firmly in Kron's debt. He began to say so, but Kron waved his thanks away.
"Don't be too thankful, lad. I had to fix your eye with what was to hand down here. I'm afraid I might have made a terrible job out of it. Take the bandage off. Tell me if you can see."
Nathan knew what was coming even before his fingers brushed cold steel around his eye. The lens of it was hard and slightly curved to the touch. He bore metal-sealed scars of his first engagement as part of the Emperor's Navy, but his vision was perfect. Nathan shuddered as he recalled Kron's unnerving personality shift after the fight with Kendrickson, when he had seemed like a slave, desperate to escape his inactive bionic eye. "Kron," Nathan began tentatively, "who are you really?" Kron chortled.
"A princeling who was stolen by gypsies."
"Don't start that again."
"Very well. I'll put it this way, lad. Cross the stars and fight for glory."
Thank you all very much for watching. I hope you've enjoyed this. It's taken longer than I thought because it was a longer story than I thought. And hopefully it's a reasonable job. If you'd like to support the channel, please use the links below. That really helps. On Patreon, I'll become a YouTube member. Also, if you wouldn't mind giving this video a like, I'd really appreciate that. And share it if you think anyone else would enjoy it. And if you're not subscribed, please remember to subscribe.
and hit the little bell for notifications. There'll be more stuff coming up soon. Thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you later. Cheers.